I'm curious, do you have a really great BS detector? Maybe you're often skeptical of others. Are you really street smart? Would you say you're pretty self-assured? You often find yourself being the leader in the group. Maybe you even struggle to ask for help. Do you love a good challenge? Do you fight really hard for the causes you believe in? Do you have a great sense of humor? I bet you're a blast. You might have thought that these were all parts of your personality, but they might actually be coping mechanisms you've picked up over the course of your life, and they're having a huge impact on how you show up, especially on this motherhood journey. Are you curious to know more? You got to take my personality patterns quiz. Here's what's going on. When you were a child, whenever an experience overwhelmed your nervous system, you subconsciously built a defense against that overwhelm. Over time, those defenses became a habit, and then they became a pattern. And now as an adult, what we think of as our personality is often this defense pattern running the show. It's so interesting, right? There are 5 different personality patterns, and they're not personality types like the Enneagram or the Myers-Briggs, but rather they describe the safety strategies that we immediately go to when we start to feel overwhelmed. They don't describe who we are so much as what's blocking who we are. The good news is that once you take my quiz and learn about your pattern, you can learn skills to break out of that pattern, and then you can live and parent your kids as your true and authentic self. Click on the quiz link in the show notes or go to michellegrosser.com/quiz now to take my 2-minute personality pattern quiz. Welcome to the Calm Mom Podcast, the show for ambitious women ready to get off the hot mess express. I know you've got a lot going on. You work so hard. You're raising an incredible family. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. I'm your host, Michelle Grosser. I'm a certified master life coach, attorney, wife, and mom. And years ago, I was right where you are. I was running a busy law practice while raising a family, and I was on the fast track to burnout. I thought I just needed to be more organized or have better routines, but it was learning how to heal and regulate my nervous system that expanded my capacity to gracefully hold more of this big, beautiful life. You too are worthy of an extraordinary life in and beyond motherhood. Learning to be a calm, anchoring presence in your home and at work is going to be your superpower. If you're here to do the inner work that brings a sense of calm amidst the chaos, I'm here to join you on that journey. Each time you press play, your growth continues. So let's get at it. Hey, hey, you guys. Welcome to the Calm Mom Podcast. Michelle Grosser here. So grateful you're with us today. We're going to be talking about one of my favorite topics, one of my favorite things to talk about, but more so one of my favorite things to do. We're talking about sleep today. And on the show, my guest today is Devin Burke. Y'all, would you believe he is our first male guest on the Calm Mom Podcast in almost 2 years? But here's the thing, what he coaches on and his message and what he teaches is just so important. It's so fundamental to the health of our nervous system that I just knew you guys had to hear from him. So Devin was recognized as one of the top 10 coaches of 2023 in the whole US. He's a TEDx speaker. He's a best-selling author and he's a renowned sleep coach. He's the founder of the Sleep Science Academy. So his company is dedicated in helping people stop suffering, right? And start sleeping using his unique holistic approach. So this conversation is really about how can you optimize your sleep? How can we eliminate insomnia naturally, right? What are the strategies and the holistic approaches that we can use to increase the quality of our sleep and making sure that we get enough sleep? And I just love how he teaches. He talks about the mind-body connection, which you guys know is my jam. So you're going to get so much out of this episode. You're going to get a bunch of really tactical tips and habits and techniques that you can start putting into practice today to reclaim your sleep. Because if there's anything I know, it's that being a mom can often be a huge compromise to our sleep, right? Our sleep takes a hit when we enter motherhood. So I know you guys need this information don't just listen today. I really encourage you to start putting it into practice, and you're going to benefit from having better quality sleep. All right, my friends, enjoy this conversation with Devin. All right, Devin, welcome to the Calm Mom Podcast. So grateful to have you with us today.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
We were just talking before I hit record that we're coming up on a 2-year anniversary. By the time this publishes, we'll have been past 2 years doing the show. And I was telling you that you're our first male guest, which is so cool. So an extra welcome to you.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm honored. I'm like, wow, this is, I got to live up to the male expectation here, right?
No, it's so funny because my audience knows too. Like I always say, I'm like, I'm not really a stickler for a lot of stuff. In my house, there's not a ton of rules. Like that's just not how we do things, but I am quite a stickler about sleep, especially for myself and my kids. So it shouldn't surprise anyone that you're here today to talk about sleep. But before we jump in, I would love it if you just took a moment and let everyone know a little bit about you, what you got going on, and just who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm Devin Burke, and I help people across the United States be able to naturally restore their ability to sleep without sleeping aids. My passion really is giving the gift of sleep back to people, because it's, you know, when you're not getting it, life is challenging, you know. Yeah. More depression, anxiety. It's hard to have a fulfilling life when you don't have the energy to actually put into life. So that's my passion. And as in my, you know, my free time, I'm learning how to play the piano, which is my latest and greatest fun thing that I'm doing. Live out in a beautiful state of Utah with my wife and my puppy. And I don't know how much more you want to know, but those are some of the highlights.
I love it. That's so good. Okay, so I want to talk about sleep and restoring sleep naturally. But I also want to start with how much sleep we actually need, because I think there's probably some misconceptions, or we're not sure, or we're so out of touch with what quality sleep feels like that we're like, oh yeah, I can run on 4 or 5 hours. And I'm not sure that's actually true. So talk to us a little bit about that and then we'll jump in.
Yeah, well, this is really interesting. So, you know, 8 hours is definitely a myth. Not everybody needs 8 hours, although some people do need 8 hours. Okay. So it really depends on your lifestyle, depends on your genetics, it depends on your age, it depends on so many factors, how much sleep one actually needs. And also, like you mentioned, the quality of that sleep is really important, because you could be getting, you know, enough sleep, but if that sleep isn't quality, you're not going to feel refreshed, you're not going to feel restored. So those are kind of two separate things. But on average, the National Sleep Foundation says we need between 7 and 8 hours for most people. Now, it is true, some people can get away with a little bit less sleep and still be functional and still not have the negative, you know, consequences. Yeah. what that creates when you're not sleeping enough. But most people need between 7 and 8 hours. And if you're sick, think about when you're sick. You need, you know, your body wants to sleep more, because that's when you're immune system restores and recovers. Mm-hmm. That's when, you know, so it kind of fluctuates, but for most people, it's between 7 and 8 generally. Some people need a little bit more. Some people can get away with a little bit less.
Okay. So I'm definitely one of the people that needs more. Like I notice it so starkly, and it affects everything if I don't get at least about 7 hours, probably ultimately, like best probably between 8 and 9. But I just wonder, especially for moms listening who have been tired or feeling tired probably for so long, that I think sometimes we just normalize that sense of feeling tired, or we're not even aware of how tired we actually are. Other than a feeling of tiredness, what are some markers, like maybe some other things we would be like, oh, I didn't even realize that, that could indicate that we're not actually getting quality sleep or enough sleep?
Yeah, I mean, this is where a lot of these sleep trackers and fitness trackers are super helpful, because you really can't manage what you're not measuring. So, yeah, you know, at Sleep Science Academy, we have all of our clients actually measure their sleep so they can get that subjective data. And even if it's not 100% accurate, and it isn't, it's consistent. And you can start to see, hey, I did X, Y, and Z, and it affected my sleep in this way. I didn't get, into the deeper stages of delta and REM sleep, and I actually can feel that in the next day. So measuring sleep, and, you know, you don't have to spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on a device. Any type of measurement is going to help you start to understand your body a little bit more. Kind of like getting a blood test. You know, only you're doing it for your sleep. And that can really be so helpful for people to understand the connection of what's going on in the day and how it's affecting their sleep and then how it affects their next day. Because it really is very subjective. Our energy, you could be sleeping great and still feel tired, right? And that could be, emotional energy. That could be stress. I mean, there's so many things that affect our energy. And sometimes people are like pointing the finger, oh, it's sleep. I need more sleep. And it's actually not. It's like, well, yes, but there's so many other things in life that are, that you're, the way that you're living that are affecting that, that energy. So it's hard just to say that, you know, I always tell people, you don't just want to connect your level of energy with your sleep because there's so many other factors that affect that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I would assume too, with one of those trackers, that's probably a good way to start to differentiate even between, like, I know you talk about the difference between our quality of sleep and our quantity. Like, we might be in bed for 8-9 hours. That doesn't mean we're getting good rest overnight, right?
100%. And actually, that's one of the mistakes people make that aren't sleeping. They spend too much time in bed, not asleep. And we call that sleep efficiency.
Okay.
And you want to have high sleep efficiency. So one of the big mistakes people make is if they're not sleeping well or enough, or they feel tired, they actually lay in bed, not asleep. And now you're anchoring your bed with wakefulness, which is the complete opposite of what we want to do if we're trying to improve sleep.
Okay. So what are some of the most efficient habits we can have, or some of the efficient habits we can have around our bed, our bedroom, sleep, that will help us improve the quality of our rest?
Yeah. It's really important for everyone to understand that literally a great night of sleep starts as soon as you wake up. Mm-hmm. And it sounds crazy to say that, but everything throughout your entire day dictates, it sets the body and mind up for natural, refreshing, restoring sleep. Or the opposite of that, fitful, restless, anxiety-inducing sleep. So, you know, one of the things that people do when they wake up usually is they go into the kitchen and they grab a big cup of coffee.
Because they're empty stomach.
An empty stomach. So they're dumping like gasoline on that cortisol fire. And then the whole rest of the day, you know, stress levels are elevated and it's not a really great way to start the morning. There's so many other better ways to start the day than a big cup of coffee that creates more stress because cortisol is highest in the morning.
Yep.
Right. So making sure that, you know, you start your day if you can in a calm, peaceful way. I mean, for some people that's really hard, especially for moms with a bunch of kids. But do something in the morning that allows your body to kind of transition into the day. Getting outside and getting sunlight is so good. So good. Especially first thing in the morning. And then when the sun's setting, those are two things that if you could just go take your kids for a walk, you know, get outside, move your body. It's really, really helpful to help manage really reset the circadian clock and also to keep the stress level not so elevated throughout the day, which then affects how hard or easy it is to sleep at night.
Yes, we talk about that actually a lot on this show about getting early morning sunlight. I am a big advocate of waking up before your kids, even if it's just like 15, 20 minutes and increasing that time. So for me, like waking up at least an hour before my kids is perfect because I get that time to just like gently ease into my day. And then the people who listen to the show, they know too that at the beginning of the year, one of my new things in 2024 is I'm not looking at my phone the first hour of the day. So kind of with the cortisol, right? And first thing in the morning, like I know that having my phone by my bed and having all that blue light and all the news and emails and everything first part of the day is really setting me up for an imbalance in my sleep wake cycles that I wouldn't even associate with like what happens 15 hours later in the day.
It's so good. Like that advice is killer. So anyone that's listening to this, definitely take action on what Michelle just said, because that will totally help you improve your sleep like massively. And people don't get that. And it's funny to think like, 15 hours later, but it does make a difference. And I've seen it with thousands of people when they actually start to draw boundaries with technology, draw boundaries with their time, really start to look at their nervous system and do things to support their nervous system.
Yep.
You can't separate your day from your night. Most of us take our days into the night and then we're like lying awake and, you know, with anxiety, wondering why we're not sleeping. It's like, well, you know, there's, it's not really, It's not the sleep, right? It's everything else that then has the result of sleep happening or not.
Yeah. Okay. I want to ask you one more question kind of related to that and then move into what happens when we do have those moments where we wake up in the middle of the night and we can't fall back asleep or if we're struggling to fall asleep or what have you. Eating before bed. That's another thing that I teach on, to try to have your last meal be at least a few hours before you're going to bed. But can you talk to us a little bit about the reason why? How does digestion or eating, trying to digest a big meal while we're trying to get quality sleep, why are those incompatible?
Yeah. So every 90 minutes we go through a sleep cycle, and you know, throughout the night, we're coming in and out of these different stages of sleep. And the first two stages of sleep, that's when most people get most of their delta sleep. That's the deepest stage of sleep. And we don't want the body sending blood to digest, you know, the big hamburger that we just ate. We want it going to other places to heal, repair, recover. The lymph system, it's like the lymph system for the brain that's moving beta amyloid, the plaque that builds up, creates Alzheimer's. We want the body to be able to do all those things at high efficiency, not try to digest the big sandwich or the big hamburger that you just ate. It's just not ideal. And you can actually, what's really interesting, I've noticed, you know, I've been measuring my sleep for about 7 years.
Okay.
And I can totally see if I eat too late at night,
okay,
I don't get into the deeper stages of sleep. Now, whether I feel it the next day, sometimes I can feel it, sometimes I don't. I feel like that's fine. But I could see it in the data that my body is not getting into those deeper stages of sleep. And I've seen it with a lot of our clients as well.
Yeah, for sure. Anything else before we kind of move on that people might not be realizing that has an impact on their sleep during the day? Like things that you usually see that people come to you and like when you point it out to them, they're like, oh, wow, I never even realized that that would have an impact on my sleep.
Yeah, that's a great, great question. One of the things is we call it nexting. It's going from the next thing to the next thing. So a lot of times people, and especially, you know, moms, we all have a lot going on, but people just kind of, it's like there's no pause in the day. It's just like a whirlwind. It's like a blur. You're going from one task to the next. You're kind of like problem solving. And it's really what that does. It revs up the nervous system. It puts the body in either a high state of stress or some, you know, it's. So when people just literally, I'm not kidding you, just take little pauses between each of their tasks, or they build a little buffer time in between their meetings, it makes a huge difference in people's sleep.
Wow.
A huge difference. And it's just because the body kind of, I like to give the analogy, it's like a balloon. If we don't let air out of the balloon, it's just this pressure and tension is building up. And then we have to let so much air out of the balloon towards the end of the day. So we want to just let air out of the balloon all day long so that there's not this big tension pressure balloon that we have to let so much air out at the end of the day to then have sleep happen.
Okay. I think that's great. I think you're talking to everybody. So when it comes to, I love this visual about the balloon, and it got me thinking, you know, releasing all of that air, all of that pressure at the end of the day, what are some ways that we can do that? Like, how does that look practically?
Yeah. So one of the big things for people that work from home is actually like having a clean stop between your work and like your non-working time. It's really hard for a lot of people to do this, but turn off the laptop, do whatever you have to do, have a hard stop on your day so that you can transition into non-work time. Because you don't want to carry that into the night with you. So having we call it like a bed buffer. having like a time that you transition, and maybe it's you change your clothes, you know, maybe, you know, you go and put like some comfortable clothes on, or you do some type of reset to say like, okay, now it's time to like start to wind down process, the relaxation process. And that could look like very different depending on your situation and your life and where you live and all the things. But it's important to have that stop, that transition. We don't want to take our days into our nights.
Yeah, just a signal, right, to all your systems that like we're not working right now. The overthinking, the like the next thing, all of that is done and we're moving into a different phase.
Yeah, and that could be even just like writing out, hey, what did I accomplish today? Like what's on my calendar for tomorrow? And then kind of just getting out of your head and sort of honoring the work that you put in, whether that was with your kids or whatever it was, and then just leaving it there. And then moving on to, okay, what's kind of the night going to look like, you know, transitioning. Having a clean transition is really, really important.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. So for women listening who can't remember the last time they had a good night's sleep or an uninterrupted night's sleep. I guess first talk to us a little bit about the difference or different kinds of insomnia. There's probably, I don't know a lot about it, but there's probably people who struggle falling asleep, people who struggle staying asleep. Mm-hmm. Is that those two different things? Do you approach them differently?
So the good news is they're approached really the same with slight differences. But there's so if you have trouble falling asleep, it's called onset insomnia. And it's insomnia if it's there's different classifications of insomnia. So a couple of days, we can call that transient insomnia. Everyone has experienced that, right? A couple of weeks, we call that acute insomnia. And then a couple more than 3 months, then it's considered like chronic.
Okay.
And only if it's really affecting your next day and it's affecting your life. So those are like the classifications. And then there's maintenance insomnia, which is difficulty staying asleep. So onset, difficulty falling asleep, maintenance, difficulty staying asleep. And there are different strategies and tools for both addressing both of those, but really they're addressed the same way with very subtle, slight differences.
Okay.
And most people, honestly, most people, so many people have insomnia. They don't even realize it. They're like, it's just not in, they don't know. That they know they don't sleep well, but they don't actually know that they have insomnia.
Oh, interesting. So they're not either not falling asleep or not staying asleep, and they don't realize it, or they don't associate it with being
normal. Yeah, they're like, oh, okay, like this is just a normal thing. Like,
oh, yeah. Okay, so if someone is listening that's having a hard time falling asleep, what are some things that they can? We talked about obviously starting in the morning, right, and all of those habits. But maybe in the bedtime routine or things that they're not necessarily considering, what are some best ways?
Yeah, the big thing is you don't want to get in bed if you're not sleepy.
Okay.
So there's a distinction between being tired and being sleepy.
Oh yeah,
really important for people to get that.
Okay.
Really important, because you don't want to get in bed if you're not sleepy, because what that's going to do is you're just going to lie in bed. Your mind's going to start to race,
yeah,
and you're going to start to worry about sleep. And then now you're anchoring, you're creating a pattern with your bed. So wait until you start to feel sleepy, then get into bed.
Okay. So I like to read before bed. I do that in bed. I should do that like on the couch and then go to bed when I'm,
I mean, it's not ideal. But if you don't have an issue with your sleep, then it's no problem. This is really, I'm really speaking to people that really have a hard time falling asleep. And it's like, you know, a chronic thing. Really, the only thing you should be doing in sleep, you definitely don't want to try to sleep in your bed. You don't want to try to sleep. That's another really important caveat. Because sleep happens. You can't force or control it.
How long does it take to fall asleep? If you're going to bed sleepy, what's like a normal time before you're like, okay, this isn't happening, I should go?
Great question. Like about 15 minutes. If it's longer than 15 minutes, you can maybe get to 20, then you actually want to get out of bed.
Okay.
This is a really important thing for people that are struggling to get. Like the big mistake is people spend too much time in bed, not asleep. So if sleep is not happening and it's after about 20 minutes, you don't want to look at the clock either. You kind of just feel, okay, like I feel kind of activated. I'm having a difficult time. My mind's busy.
Yeah.
Get yourself out of bed. And go to a place and have a plan to do something relaxing. Not so that you fall back asleep. Just do it to do it. Because if you're doing something so that you're like trying to control sleep, like I'm trying to like, oh, I'm going to do this thing and then it's going to make me sleepy. And then now there's this expectation.
Oh my gosh.
Right? It's this whole thing. It becomes like a mind game. And people get stuck in this. And it's very paradoxical. It's like, sleep's one of the few things in life that the harder you try to do, actually the worse it becomes.
Right. It makes sense. So if you're not falling asleep, you're going to a place, you're just trying to relax and chill out, enjoy yourself. That does not include anything on your phone, I assume.
Ideally,
right?
No.
I was saying.
Yeah. No checking emails or text messages or Instagram or anything like that. Just, you know, reading is great. You know, read something that's, stretch, meditate, make some tea, do something. Some people knit. Some people play music or listen to music. And then once you start to feel sleepy, then just go back in the bed.
Okay. Yeah. And then how about if you're waking up in the middle of the night? I have a lot of clients who will tell me, I wake up at the same time every night. Like it's like 3 o'clock on the dot. And for some reason, I'm like up and I can't fall back asleep. Is there something to that in our patterns of sleeping? Like is that a thing? And then what should they do? Is it the same thing or should they do something different?
Yeah. So every about 90 minutes, we actually all wake up.
Okay.
We're just not conscious. Okay. And then, so some people come into consciousness at a certain time and it becomes a pattern. And it's really the same thing. So if you wake up in the middle of the night and, you know, you're busy mind or you're feeling restless, and after about 20 minutes, sleep is not coming, then again, you want to get out of bed, go to a place, execute a plan, same thing.
Okay.
That's even more important for people that in the middle of the night they wake up and they have a hard time falling back to sleep. Now, mm-hmm. sometimes you might wake up and then, you know, you're kind of up and then you're just laying there and then all of a sudden you fall back asleep. No issue there. No okay. problem. But if you wake up and you're up for, you know, several hours or an hour and you're kind of just in bed, you definitely want to get out of bed. And people think, they're like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. Because Devin, if I'm not in bed, there's no chance I'm going to fall back to sleep. But it's really about the association, and it's about breaking the pattern, the mind-body pattern that gets created of you waking up and then struggling to fall back asleep in bed.
Right. As you describe it, it makes so much sense. And I even think about periods in my life where I've done that. Like, I've been waking up in the middle of the night and had a hard time going back to sleep. And if I stay in bed, all I do is I get more upset and more anxious about the lack of sleep, right? And then I'm checking my phone or the clock every like 15 minutes, and I'm like doing the math in my head. I'm like, now I'm down to like 6.5 hours of sleep.
Exactly.
And it sucks.
And it creates all this pressure. It creates all the anything that creates pressure around sleep, you want to look at deeper.
Mm.
Because sleep is the most natural thing in the world. Just like we breathe, we don't think about that. Our heart beats, we don't think about hair grows, nails grow. You don't have to think about sleep. Mm-hmm. If you find yourself thinking about sleep, then you wanna really go deeper into the thought of like, what's going on here where I'm thinking that I need to do something or worry about the most natural thing in the world. It's so natural. Like, there's nothing anyone needs to do. Actually, there's many people, millions of people around the world that actually do all of the wrong things and sleep. There's people that sleep on the side of cliffs. There's people that sleep in war zones, right? There's Navy SEALs that are doing crazy stuff and they're able to sleep. So again, it's one of these things. I think sometimes because of our culture, we're in this culture of like improve and you know, it's like, and I'm not saying you shouldn't have the intention to improve your sleep. Mm-hmm. I want to be very clear about that.
Right.
The intention is not to obsess over it and really not to worry about it. Put it on a pedestal. And it deserves to be on a pedestal. So it can be a little bit tricky here.
But there's a tipping point, right?
Yes.
Where it's like all of a sudden it doesn't become as beneficial to be so fixated on it.
Exactly. And that's really what we're speaking to here.
So for people who have struggled with sleep for a long time, maybe they've seen doctors, they've been prescribed sleep medication, maybe they're on sleeping pills right now, or rely on something, melatonin or something else that they think is helping them sleep. Would you talk to us about, or what would you say to them? Like what do they do from here? Do they wean themselves off this stuff? I'm sure you have an opinion on melatonin. I think that's probably something that's really misunderstood by people who take it. So if you want to speak on that, that'd probably be really helpful too.
Yes. Yeah. So first and foremost, I just wanted to put this, not medical advice. I'm not telling you what to do with your medication or anything. So disclaimer there, but I will say this, there is a time and place for supplements and for medication. Okay. Unfortunately, one of the mistakes that people make is they rely on it.
Mm.
And it becomes, I can't sleep without my fill in the blank, Ambien, melatonin, Xanax, whatever it is that you're taking. Those medications are really, they were designed to be used temporarily while you address the underlying causes in your psychology, in your behavior, and in, you know, balancing your body.
Makes sense.
And the reason why they're so dangerous when people rely on these things is because you're putting your power outside of something else.
Yeah.
You're saying, I need this thing in order to do something that's so natural.
Mm.
And that's dangerous because now you have to have it or you believe you're not going to be able to sleep. And it's simply not true. We've helped literally hundreds of people that have been for decades on all different types of medications, pills, supplements.
Wow.
Restore their natural ability to sleep when they actually address the underlying causes as to why they're not sleeping in the first place.
Mm.
And that's really important for people to get. Like, they're band-aids.
Yeah.
And there's a time and a place for a Band-Aid. If you have a cut and it's bleeding and you don't want to get over all over your clothes, put a Band-Aid on.
Yes.
But know that, you know, it's a Band-Aid. It's not really going to solve the underlying challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And I think with melatonin in particular, a lot of people think, I think they misunderstand what it is they're even taking. Like, I think they think it's a supplement or it's like a nutrient or something. Yeah. And they don't realize that they're ingesting hormones, right?
That's
what melatonin is. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about melatonin, I guess, in particular, because I know a lot of people give it to their kids too. So maybe people listening give it to their kids.
Yeah. There's a lot of misinformation and a lot of confusion around melatonin. Melatonin, it is a hormone. So people, and at one point, I'm not sure if it's still, it used to need a prescription in the European Union to actually get it.
Wow.
But here in the United States, like you mentioned, people, it's in like kids' gummies.
Yeah.
Everyone's taking melatonin. And a lot of people don't realize, first and foremost, it is a hormone. Your body naturally produces melatonin.
Right.
Right. And there's things you can do, like getting sun in the morning, getting outside, you know, wearing blue light blocking glasses. If you're around a screen all day, there's things you can do to help support the natural production of melatonin so you don't need to take it.
Right.
And it's not actually, there's a lot of studies on melatonin and sleep, and a meta-analysis, which is an analysis of all of the studies of melatonin connected to sleep, show that it doesn't actually even help with sleep.
Wow.
It can help with jet lag because what it does is it kind of sets like a timer. It sort of helps set it, but it doesn't help you fall asleep or stay asleep longer. The studies show that it really doesn't do that. Now, melatonin used for other purposes, it's an antioxidant. So for there's certain health conditions that actually can be improved through supplementation of melatonin. But when we're talking about sleep, I don't really recommend it.
The power of the placebo effect, right? Or just like thinking that we need something, like you were saying, that reliance.
That is it. I'm serious. I'm telling you, that is it. It's insane. I mean, placebo is a real thing, and 100% people that are like, oh no, my melatonin, when I take it, all of a sudden I'm just like so tired. And it's like, okay, well, okay. All right. It is interesting, but and it's one of the most popular sleep supplements. I mean, it's like, it's really hard actually to find sleep supplements that don't have melatonin in it.
Interesting.
And a lot of them have like mega doses. It's like way more than you actually even need to like help support the, you know, the system if you're using it for like jet lag or something like that, which in those cases, it can be helpful for sure.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I would love for you to speak to the parents a little bit about our kids' sleep. Is there anything, I guess, that's different or anything we should be particularly aware of when it comes to kids, in particular their need for sleep, how it affects brain development? I don't know if kids are generally underslept, if people underestimate, but what it is that you notice or find?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things, like I always tell parents, like if you have a bedtime ritual for your kid where you bathe them, you read them a book, you don't let them be on their computer or their phone or their iPad. Like those are things that adults should do. And kids should do as well.
Yeah.
Like it's really the same. It's the same. And it is really important that you help your kids prioritize sleep, understand why it's important, and set them up for healthy sleep as a teenager and as an adult. And again, depending on how old your kids are and what stage of life they're in, how much they need, that's going to change. Right. But the important thing is that you get them in a routine and you educate them on why it's important.
Yeah.
And you create a space for them to feel safe in their bed and safe in the home. Because there's a big connection between feeling safe and having sleep happen.
Right.
A lot of times people don't feel safe in their bed for a number of reasons. And you want to really start to anchor safety in the bed and bedroom because that's, you know, it's allows sleep to happen
much
more naturally.
Right.
Yeah.
We talk about the nervous system obviously a lot on this show, but you know, I would assume that good sleep requires us to be in a deep parasympathetic state to have access to that full safety, right? Where we can just actually rest. And sometimes we don't realize a lot of these things that we've even been talking about today impact our nervous system and thus our sleep, like the eating before bed or like even alcohol, right? A lot of people, I'm sure, think a glass of wine before bed really helps me to sleep. But that actually doesn't allow us to get into that parasympathetic state that sleep, deep sleep, good sleep would necessitate, right?
100%. Yeah. Alcohol it's going to heat the body up. You know, it's going to dehydrate you, and it does make you feel sleepy. Mm-hmm. It's a depressant.
Initially, right?
Yeah. But and again, if you're measuring your sleep, you can, like, I've done experiments, and what's interesting, what I find really interesting, the type and the quality of alcohol affects different people in different ways.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So the quality of the alcohol that you're consuming, and actually the type, like some certain people, like certain types of alcohol actually have less of an impact on their sleep than others, which is, I think it's just interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah. So, but I'm not, you know, ideally you're not consuming alcohol, really there's, you know, within 3 hours before you like to be asleep, you know, so having a glass of wine at dinner, cool. But having a nightcap, like a whiskey or something, right, just to knock you out, that's not ideal.
Yeah, that's another Band-Aid, right? It seems like it might help you fall asleep, but you're not going to get good sleep.
It is. And people actually become alcoholics because they use it as a sleeping aid. I've seen a lot of actually people in our clients that talked about, hey, like how I became an alcoholic was because I wasn't sleeping and I didn't want to take medication. So I was self-medicating with alcohol. And then I became like an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So it for sure is a thing.
Yeah.
Caffeine's another one. I mean, caffeine, it's in like everything, you know, all these energy drinks and, you know, coffee, it's in, you know, a lot of other things that people take. Yeah. And what caffeine does is it blocks adenosine. Adenosine is this chemical that builds up in our body that creates sleepiness. And caffeine, if you look at the molecular structure of it, looks very similar to adenosine, and it just kind of moves in and doesn't allow the receptors to really, it blocks essentially where that adenosine should be going. And so you feel alert, but unfortunately it affects the quality and depth of our sleep.
Right. Like, and people think, oh, that caffeine gives me energy. And it's like, well, it doesn't give you energy. It's just blocking your tiredness, you from experiencing or feeling your tiredness.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And you know, I think used properly, it can be, you know, helpful for productivity and all the things, but there needs to be boundaries around it. And it's a drug. It's addictive.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. It's like, there's a reason why there's a Starbucks on like every corner in America, right? It's like,
especially when, like, you couple it with a bunch of sugar and like whatever else you're putting in it.
Exactly. Yeah. The Frappuccinos with the whipped cream on top and the chocolate. It's like, man, of course. But yeah, it's just not ideal. And again, once in a while, sure. And used in the proper ways. Like one of the tricks, you can take L-theanine with your coffee.
Yeah.
That kind of helps kind of buffer or put some medicinal mushrooms, not psychedelic mushrooms, but like reishi or chaga or cordyceps or some type of mushroom in your coffee. That can be not only promote health, but helps just nourish the adrenal glands so they're not getting blasted.
Right.
So I there's hacks.
With caffeine too, really quickly, I think people also underestimate the half-life, right? How long does it take for a body to actually process this caffeine? So like some people will think, oh, I have my last cup of coffee right before dinner or something. Well, that's actually going to have a huge impact. Can you just talk to that for a minute? Like, if people are going to drink caffeine, what do you recommend as far as making sure we're sleeping well?
Yeah. I mean, that's so awesome that you brought that up. Yeah. The half-life can be 6 hours. So it's in your, it's in your system for 12 hours.
Right.
And so there are certain people that, depending on how fast you metabolize caffeine, some people metabolize it really fast. And then some people are really slow at metabolizing caffeine. So that half-life is going to be different depending on your biochemistry and genetics. Mm-hmm. That being said, for most people, you really don't want to have caffeine after like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, even that's cutting it close. Like, I would say, you know, have like a mid-morning coffee and then let it in. No afternoon espressos or, you know, before dinner coffees or after dinner espressos, you know, once in a while, fine. But having it be a consistent thing, that's really where it creates the issues, where you're not getting into these deeper stages of sleep.
Yeah, it's so good. I'm definitely someone who's sensitive and takes forever to process it. So I'm like, I have my one more, like after breakfast, my one cup, and then I know my body. I just can't, I don't do any more during the day. Not good for me.
Yeah, and that's good that you know that about yourself. And it's, you know, it's having that self-awareness, I think, is really important. And also it's like, depending on the day, like if you have a really busy, stressful day, maybe it's not the best day to have caffeine, because what caffeine is going to do, it's just going to rev up all your systems even more. Mm-hmm. So maybe if it's like a more calm, relaxing day and you enjoy the cup of coffee, okay, great. Like that's the time to have it, versus like days where you're really busy and you got a lot going on. It's like, I don't know, that extra boost might kind of just send you over the edge, and then there's a cascading effect for the rest of the day and the night.
Yeah. Busyness in your schedule. And I think also being in tune with the state of your nervous system. Cause if you're waking up already feeling kind of on edge or like anxious to begin with, you can adjust, right, what you're intaking. And obviously that'll impact your sleep.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, this has been so good. I've learned so much, and I'm believing that everyone listening has also had some light bulb moments, and they're going to make some tweaks to their schedules and routines to help optimize their sleep. So thanks so much for being here with us. Before you go, can you let everyone know where to find you? I know you've talked about your programs and clients and people that are really looking for support, natural support with their sleep. Can you let us know where they can find you to get some help?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So sleepscienceacademy.com. And then, you know, on YouTube, I put out a lot of free content. So people can find me on YouTube, Sleep Science Academy, Instagram, Devin Burke Wellness or Sleep Science Academy. But yeah, I would just say, you know, if you're really struggling with your sleep, don't wait to solve it. You know, there's ways, there's a system, and there's a proven way to allow your body to sleep.
Yeah. And like, it's so good. On the show, like we talk about our nervous system being foundational to so much of how we show up, sleep is the same thing, right? I don't think we even understand the depth to which it impacts our relationships, our mental clarity, our work life, our parenting, our mental, emotional, physical health. All of it is rooted in our quality of sleep. So I cannot, you know, put my seal of approval on that any harder, guys. If that's something you struggle with, check this out, because, you know, maybe today is the day that you take a step in the direction of doing something about it, because you don't have to be so tired, especially when it relates to sleep, that you can do something about.
100%. Yeah. I honestly think the more people improve their sleep, the better the world we live in. You think about like people road raging and like being, you know, short with their kids and like just feeling angry because you're just tired and you're grumpy. Cause you know, it's like, I know how I am when I don't sleep. Like, so
it's not fun for anybody.
It's not fun, right? And it affects everything in your environment, how you like all the things you just said. Yeah. And what's interesting to me is when I see people that are underslept and then they're getting the sleep that they need, they're different people.
Yes. Yeah.
And I can speak that for myself. Yes. I mean, like I'm a different person. So it truly can make the world a better place. Like that's the message here. Like, and it starts with you taking responsibility for your habits and what you're doing and what you're not doing to set yourself up to just feel good, so that it's easier just to be happy and be a nice person in this world. We need more of that right now.
We sure do. Yes, 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 and amen. Well, thanks again. Thanks for the work that you're doing. Thanks for being here with us. This was awesome. So appreciate you.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
If you love Mommy's Podcast, leave a review.
If you enjoyed this episode, it would be so awesome if you could take a moment to subscribe and rate the podcast. And if you have just a few more seconds to leave a quick review, they really help to get this podcast out to other moms like you. I read every last review, and trust me, when it's late at night or early in the morning before my kids get up and I'm working on bringing you all of this content, your reviews are what keep me going. Leaving a review is truly the best way you can thank me. And of course, DM me on Instagram. I love to hear from you. Thanks for listening to another episode. Head over to the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at michellegrosser.com, where you'll find free resources and more ways to connect with me. If you love the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.